Gary Moore, good afternoon.
Hello, Jim.
Nice to have you here. Steve McCabe, how are you?
Never better, Jim, never better.
Will the government hold its course with asset sales and the new course being charted for Auckland by the Māori Statutory Board? The Christchurch chief executive suing his own employers? Are we entering an era where you won't be able to take breaks from your desk? Quite right too. Is having an obsessive compulsive disorder a good enough excuse for tagging? If you've got an OBE, how would you like it to stand for Order of the British Excellence? Because they want to get rid of the empire word, that colonialist word, that hangover to the old days. Susan Baldacci, good afternoon.
I like that word. That's a great word.
What, empire?
Yeah.
Well, you people in America used to, I shouldn't say that, but you used to be part of that great empire once upon a time, but you threw the tea in the harbour.
And that's maybe why we're a bit nostalgic about it. We have a different view of it, I think, maybe. But
talking about what the world's talking about today. Good afternoon,
Well,
Susan.
The tweets are starting to fly from news organisations around New Zealand because the Prime Minister has just announced that the New Zealand troops will pull out of Afghanistan by the end of April next year, April 2013. This isn't a surprise. It was something that the Prime Minister hinted at when he was talking about the five Kiwi soldiers who've been killed in the last month. But now it has been confirmed by Cabinet. So the 10-year deployment will finish April 2013.
Very good. That's the confirmed date. Thank you, Susan.
That's right. Now, there is now confirmation about whether or not vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan really
did... Yeah, he's not vice president yet.
Vice presidential candidate.
Thank you. That'll do nicely. Thank you. You have me worried.
Paul Ryan, whether or not he really did do something that he said he did. He was doing a radio show last week where he said that he once ran a marathon in under 3 hours, which is an absolutely amazing feat.
It's a really good time.
And darn those fact checkers, they are such a pain.
Some sleuthing
was done, and it was discovered that he actually had not a bad time, 4 hours, 1 minute, and 25 seconds. That's the real time.
Yeah, and that's a perfectly creditable
time. That's very
time.
Respectable.
So why did he say he ran out in under three?
I don't know. To make himself sound
because
better.
Because it's now perfectly acceptable for politicians to say anything. I mean, I could quite easily claim that on my over here, I rescued 5 children from a burning building. I misspoke. Or I misstated. Is that the word we use these days for?
Misspoke, misstated.
No. All you guys have got it wrong. He's a Catholic. He can go to confession and clean it up.
That's the marvellous benefit of Catholicism, isn't it?
That's right.
You start again with a clean slate.
And then if he gets elected, America can do the penance.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, today you wouldn't have been rescuing children from a burning building. You would have been rescuing residents of Portland Road, Remuera in Auckland, which seems to be underwater.
Oh, dear.
No, it was terrible rain this afternoon. But anyway, so the true fact is 4 hours, 1 minute, 25 seconds, and I think this one will hound him for a while.
Yeah, Gary, do you agree with that? I mean, is it in politics, these kinds of trivial declarations that sink you or that people remember?
Yeah, it's often something that is said, as an aside that actually kills you. In a situation like that, it just shows that he doesn't have great judgment, actually, because you know that... I remember when we used to send letters out from my office, we used to say, how would this take the front page of the press test? And, this guy should have... He exaggerated to make himself look better, and in fact, he's made himself look worse. It's just crazy.
Lest we be accused of Republican bashing, we are neutral on this pre-panel segment towards the American presidential election, and we gave Paul Ryan time on Friday, didn't we? We broadcast what he said about small business owners in the United States.
Yeah, that's right.
But since then, he's claimed to have run a marathon.
Yeah, that's right. And, you're absolutely right. It's the small things. I mean, who remembers anything that Sarah Palin said except, I can see Russia from my house?
Which she never
said. It's those little throwaway lines.
Which she never said. Poor Sarah Palin.
No, Tina Fey said
similar
it.
To that anyway.
What? Tina Fey being Sarah Palin said, well, let's go further back. Other wonderful American politicians, Hillary Clinton claims she dodged bullets coming out of a helicopter.
Yeah, she did. That's right.
Then she then remembered that, oh, no, I didn't really do that. I just made it up. It seems to be what American politicians do until they get called on it.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting story that's happening right now at the London Paralympics. The Blade Runner, the so-called Blade Runner, the South African sprinter, Oscar Pistorius, has been beaten in the 200 meters. And he's actually claiming that it's an unfair race because one of the other people who won, this was a Brazilian runner, he was a little bit of the underdog, he beat Pistorius by 0.07 of a second. I mean, that is just nothing. Mm. Well, he claims that his prosthetic blades are a little bit too long.
So are we saying now that prosthetic blades give one an unfair advantage?
Well, that's what he seems
well,
to
be. Well, the longer
the
blade, you've got to have a... He says this. They didn't measure them properly, did they?
Yeah, and of course the Brazilian runner who won says, yep, everything was approved. I've been running on these for a while, so it's
Makes
all
sense.
Good.
And Pistorius ran a slow time. That's the other thing.
Well, it's not that much slower, but I mean, he'd set a world record in the heats leading up to it. So he'd been running really amazingly well. But on that particular race, he was, you know, 0.15 seconds slower. And
Could just do a Paul Ryan and tell people he ran faster.
Yeah. Yeah,
the original Blade Runners carried surgical instruments. And the original story. I reminded myself of that this afternoon because I thought Blade Runner, as Edgar Rice Burroughs, what did they do? And they carried surgical instruments across a disease-ravaged America to save people.
Which totally relates to what happened in London at the Paralympics.
Well, it's just that the name's been appropriated, first of all, by Ridley Scott and now by Mr. Pistorius.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's right. But it's such a great name, Blade Runner.
It is great.
And they are like blades, and that's what they call them. So, you know, it was only natural that was going to happen.
Great big fluffy blades.
I think they're incredible. Absolutely
they
incredible.
Are amazing. They're absolutely
incredible.
Now, while we're talking about sci-fi movies and all those kinds of things, star of all those kinds of films, big action movies, things like that, Bruce Willis, he's got a little fight on his hands, and he's fighting a battle that may affect all of us. I did not know this, but when you buy an iTunes, you know, for your iPad or your iPod, you're actually kind of renting it more than buying it. And Bruce Willis is fighting to leave his iPod tunes to his family. He's considering legal action against Apple over who actually owns the downloaded tunes from iTunes. But I did not realize this. I don't think most people know when you read the fine print that you're actually borrowing the music from iTunes rather than purchasing it. So apparently, if something happens to Bruce Willis, as often happens in the movies, you know, and he goes down on, and you know, isn't able to save the building from the terrorists and so forth. He can't; his kids don't get to keep his iTunes.
Well, what
so
do Apple take them immediately back when they hear about the news of his death?
You can't transfer them from one iPod to another. So he would have that.
People do though, don't they?
They probably figured out a way to do it, but legally, you're not supposed to do that.
No, so he's worried. But why can't they just put the iPod? Why can't they put the headphones on and listen to Dad's music?
Mm. They could, but if you want it for your own iPod to add to all of your own music, you're not allowed to do that.
No,
because even though your dad paid for it, he paid iTunes for that song, you don't own it. You don't get to give it to
Why do you want
your
kids to listen to the music that
I doubt
you like.
It'll ever be an issue. My daughter certainly would not want to inherit my music.
No, same.
I was just thinking the same thing.
But it is. I just think that most of us don't realize that you didn't buy that, you borrowed it.
No, it's an interesting case.
So it's interesting.
But,
to see what happens.
But that's been taking them on.
That's been the case for years with software. With music in general, you never actually buy the music itself. You only ever buy a license to listen to it. That's always been the case.
Yeah, probably, but we just don't read the fine print.
They never told us this would come.
Now, here's a battle that's been reenacted 200 years ago this week. The Napoleon Bonaparte fought a battle in Russia that sort of led to the beginning of his undoing. And this has been reenacted by hundreds and hundreds of these people who love doing these reenactments. So they, you know, are out there on the battlefield and half of them are dressed as the Russians and half of them are dressed as the French.
Who won this time?
I think they tried to keep it as accurate as possible. But I don't know. I don't get why you know, war is so horrible. Why do you want to reenact it?
It's a boy thing.
This was a huge... French suffered, you know, 30,000 dead. The Russians, 45,000 dead in a single day. Why do you want to relive that?
Didn't Hitler try and reenact it in about 1940-odd?
Yeah, he did, actually. He had a go.
Didn't work out too well for him either, did it?
No, and the winter sunk them both.
Yes.
But war gamers do this all the time.
Yeah, all over. Mm. Yeah.
They relive the great battles of history, and sometimes they do turn out differently.
Is that right?
Yeah, wargamers replay some of the key points of the, like the Battle of Stalingrad, of the Second World War, and it can go a completely different way if the Germans happen to break the Russians at Stalingrad and then go on to be able to get control of the southern oil fields, blah, blah, blah.
But how do they actually re-win the battle, assuming they're not actually killing people? Which I guess they don't, probably, even though they've got the toy guns and stuff. How do they, if they're being authentic to the original battle, how can they win one that they...
Well, instead of taking your Stuka dive bombers out of Stalingrad and assigning them to the North Africa, you leave them there for an extra 2 or 3 weeks, and then you manage to overcome the Russian resistance.
So it's like playing Risk with life-size pieces.
Yeah, that's I think that's what it is. And that is a cool game, so anyway. That's very, very interesting.
So is Diplomacy. That's a good game. Nobody plays Diplomacy now.
Nobody plays Diplomacy anymore.
Yeah, we don't get killed in that, though.
No, it's a very, it's a good game.
Now, speaking of history, we were talking about this a few weeks ago. The 100-year-old package that had been delivered by the mayor of a small town in Norway to the local museum and was told, do not open this for 100 years and it will solve all your financial problems. Well, they opened the package on the date that was specified by that mayor 100 years ago.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Surprise, inside the package, another package. Inside that package, a few more packages. And not diamonds or shares in something.
But what? It's killing us.
A number of fabrics in the color of Norway's flag.
What?
From the king.
What?
Some newspaper clippings, a bit of notes. And frankly, not gold to anybody but the museum folks who think it's fantastic because they're things that dated back to 1912.
How dreadfully dull.
I know. And it was, it was this whole crowd. The Princess Astrid of Norway was there and all this buildup. It was sort of like when they tried to open, was it Houdini's safe? Somebody's safe they opened on live TV. I remember it was Geraldo Rivero. And, just like, what could be in there? What could be in there? And there was nothing. And they did this on live TV as well.
But how could the mayor back in 1912 have said this was going to save you?
Well, there were some, were ledgers, little notes, accounts of donations that had been given to the museum over the years. So, this is the sad thing.
I reckon somebody stole the gold krona.
That could be a good
theory. I reckon that's what happened. They had a whole lot of gold buried underground, and somebody knew that.
He had the treasure map, and somebody got to it first and dug up the treasure and took away the map and left only the bits of paper. And
alternatively, expectations were just a lot lower back in 1912 Norway.
What an anticlimax. I know. That's sad. Now, here's an interesting story for anybody who enjoys a beer. The size and not so much the size, but the shape of the glass you drink beer from could actually have an impact on how much you drink. If you drink it out of a curved glass, one that is sort of smaller at the bottom and then, kind of gets bigger as it goes up, you will actually drink dramatically faster than if you drink out of a straight-sided glass that's sort of straight up and down. And it has to do with sort of an optical illusion about seeing whether it's full or not full.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is an interesting little study, and they did find that drinking time is slowed by almost 60% when an alcoholic beverage is presented in a straight glass versus a curved glass.
I wonder if it applies to all beverages.
No.
It doesn't.
They tested it with lemonade and found that it didn't make any difference.
So it's not the awkwardness, the straightness of the glass. Somehow, it's got nothing to do with that. It's the perception.
It's the perception of how much is in there, and so, so that is interesting. And of course, so many beer glasses are those, smaller at the bottom and work their way up.
I know they've all changed over the years, haven't they?
So the shape of the glass can make a difference.
Okay.
Now here's an.
I've always found it was the taste that made the difference.
And how thirsty you are.
I find it's who's buying the next.
And how hot it is outside.
It's usually who's buying the next round that determines how thirsty.
Yes, it's about then your bladder kicks in.
That slows you right down.
Now I know for some of you gentlemen today, your kids are too old for allowance. But do your kids still get allowance?
My daughter does, yeah. If you're listening, love, apparently you're told for an allowance. You heard that on the radio. That's official. I'm sticking by that. Yeah, you've had your last one.
Studies of, you know, we all know that parents are the big role models when it comes to their kids making financial decisions. So this is a new study out of the American Institute of CPAs, surveyed American kids and found that they get on average $780 per year in pocket money. Sounds like a lot of money.
That's what, about $15 a week?
Yeah, I guess it's about that. Yeah, but this really sad thing is that only 1% of kids save their pocket money.
How do they know?
They
that?
Just spend it. Well, this is a survey they did with, you know, with families.
Okay.
1% of kids. So you know, obviously they're looking at their parents who aren't saving either and emulating exactly the same thing.
No wonder the world's in financial crisis.
When the kids are throwing away $15 a week, it's appalling.
Yeah, what are they spending it on?
Ours have started spending it.
Yeah,
but in our exemplary family, Susan,
we
also encourage them to put a bit in the bank, in the school bank, on Thursday morning.
I have one spender and one saver. I have one of each.
I'll just say, my daughter spent hers on Father's Day gifts. Good on you.
Yeah,
awesome.
Right.
That's
$15
that's
a week is a lot of pocket money.
That's not bad.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of pocket money.
And that's the average. Of course, some kids more, some kids less.
So Americans can afford $15 a week pocket money for their children. It's amazing.
The ones that were surveyed by the CPAs.
Thank you. Yes. Susan Baldacci. Susan Baldacci back tomorrow after 4 o'clock. Steve McCabe with Gary Moore on the panel.